Well, let's find out what the people out here at the Howard Menger farm. I understand that this is a 100-acre farm, and we took a brief break to change tape. However, this will possibly not be noticed as you're listening to this. I don't know what day this is if you're listening, but I know that today, that is the day that we're recording this, is Saturday, September 13th. It's a beautiful day out here. In, where are we? Well, this isn't Lebanon, is it?
Somewhere near Lebanon. I don't know the word.
This is Highland?
No, we are near White House.
Well, nevertheless, it's a beautiful day. A lot of cows and horses over there, but no sausage. And, well, that's a sensible question to ask, but I'm not going to argue with you.
There's trees all over the place.
Les, I'm going to put you on a spot in a moment. Let me talk to this gentleman here. Come in here, sir, a moment, please. Come in here, sir. What is your name, sir?
Conrad Brown.
Conrad, is this the first time that you've been to one of these outings?
Yes, it is.
Are you really interested in the possibility of flying saucers?
Well, I would say so, yes.
What created this interest in your mind?
Well, I suppose the first articles back in about 47.
You mean the ones about Kenneth Arnold?
Yes.
When he coined the phrase flying saucers? Are you referring to some of the articles that like in True Magazine and Agassiz?
Yes, the articles.
So now, 47, this is what, 58, that's a good 11 years ago.
That's right.
And during 11 years, you've matured, and there's a lot of additional stories. What do you think about it today?
Well,
I'm emotional now.
No.
I have never seen what I believe that is quite possible for them to exist.
I base my belief mainly on the logical assumption that we aren't the only people inhabiting the universe. I can't imagine or accept the fact or belief that the universe is as large as it is supposed to be, and what we're the only inhabitants. I think either there are more people or it's not as large.
Mm-hmm. I spoke to a lady about 15 or 20 minutes ago, and I asked her the question. I said, supposing I pointed to some individual standing there and I told you that this person is a Venusian or a Martian or a Saturnian, would you believe it? And for a moment, she said, she said, no. She would want this person to demonstrate telepathic ability. What would you require for proof?
Well, I would like to get along with the individual and converse with him, ask a number of questions, and then require him to achieve some feat that I think a Martian or inhabitant of Venus would be
able to. Now, that gives me another question. What kind of feat?
Well, I have no idea at the moment.
Supposing a feat has been demonstrated to you this afternoon, and you didn't have the ability to recognize it. Is it possible? Because you don't even know what your desire is. In other words, what you're looking for proof.
Well, that's what I say. After conversing with him, I'm quite sure that in the course of the conversation, some type of idea would make
all
itself
right
known in my mind.
I would appreciate very much if you'll cooperate with me a moment.
All right.
And ask, this is not a Venusian, but this happens to be Lester Del Rey. Lester Del Rey is a noted science fiction writer, and of course, Ellery Lanier is the fact editor of Fantastic Universe, and Lester is a non-believer. He wrote the book Rockets Through Space, which is published by Winston, which is all based on facts. But I wonder if I can, for just a moment, just to play this part. I want to hear you interview this man. Supposing I presented him to you and I said, this man here with the beard claims he's a Venusian. Now, would you take, and I'm very serious about this. I want to hear your line of questioning. This is not a gag or anything. I just want to hear him. You question him and determine in your mind in 5 or 6 minutes that he is or he isn't. Go ahead. Let me hear it.
Well, first of all, how did you get here?
Actually, I've teleported. Usually we fly in saucers, but this time it's cheaper to teleport.
Cheaper?
Yes, cheaper. As long as the other end is hooked up.
Well, when you say cheaper, how do you mean cheaper? And as far as money is concerned?
No, no. Cheaper in psychic guessing.
Well, I'll tell you, psychic essence is a little above me.
I can explain it perhaps. You see, there's a field of high radiation around the Earth. That has been put there to keep the satellites from going too far at the present time. So when a Martian comes here on an exploratory visit, it is necessary now that he either have a very expensive shield, psychically expensive, it drains him very heavily. To get through that, you may have read it in your newspapers, as a matter of fact, about 600 miles up. He either has to get through that by never blowing away a psychic energy, or he has to be sent to a teleport machine. Now, that can have personally teleport. And if I'm coming across, it will draw me back. And that's gets me through the machine instantaneously. So there's no law for psychic death. And it's for really good purposes. Really curiosity. I was approached as a student with a proposition that I could spend my vacation here on Venus, and I chose to spend it here since there are more people here.
Well, since you've been here, what do you think of the people?
I find them a little hard to understand. I find them quite incredible. To me, it is very puzzling that they move around constantly by a process of friction. All cars move by friction and so on, and this is absolutely incredible. It seems like such a difficult way. I wondered how they've mastered this.
Well,
I think you'll agree with me that he had some very intelligent answers.
Yes, I would say that.
What would you say to this now?
Well, he has an advantage over me.
Well, wouldn't a Venusian have it, or a Martian have an advantage over you?
Well, I suppose so. Yes.
Well, now, what do you think? Because you know this is Lester Galray.
Yeah.
Do you think possibly Lester Galray?
I'm sure it's Lester Galray.
That's right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Conrad, you've been thank you very, very much. I appreciate it a lot. Thanks for talking with us. Thank you very much.
I think that's a classic. I only hope that Lester and Evelyn, that they're listening this morning, because I think that Lester did a masterful job on that. You know, this is strictly the spur of the moment idea.
I had fun, and I didn't hear about it from John, but I did hear Lester say that you had sort of put him on the spot a little bit.
Well, it wasn't. Lester on the spot. We were talking to this gentleman, Conrad, wasn't it? We were talking with Tom Robore, and he made a statement in answer to one of my questions that he thought that he could determine in his mind if a person was an Earth person or a Venusian or a Martian after interviewing him. And, I could have gone on and on, you know, say, well, what would you expect the person to say to prove to you that they're a Venusian or something? So then it dawned on me, this would make a good little bit. And, of course, I will admit this, that I put Les on the spot to the degree that, he was not aware of the fact that I was going to do this. But,
I think he
squared
himself. He did very well.
I think he did a great job. Tell me. Well, let's get back to the tape. Let's hear them now.
What is your name, ma'am?
Maloney.
Maloney?
Yes.
Where did I? Which side? Yeah, which side? The dark or the light?
Oh. May, what do you think of this first annual interplanetary East Coast spacecraft symposium convention or what have you? What do you think of it?
I think it's interesting. Of course, this is something entirely new to me, and
come on, you're holding
beyond
back.
All my thoughts.
Go ahead.
But other than that, I really don't know what to say. I personally, I'm one of the types of people I've got to be still. The only flying saucer I've ever seen is when we have a trap of one flying saucer.
How long have you... first of all, let me ask you, why did you come out here today?
Why? Because I'm here with my very lovely husband, which I think you'd love to talk to. And he's interested in all this business. He's towards that. He's very much interested, and he thinks that those things are possibilities.
Would you say that
maybe your very lovely husband, let's say, that there's just a little something wrong with him because he's
oh,
very
good.
There's
nothing wrong with him. He's very intelligent.
Well, then
very
he
nice.
Is, and I agree with you. There's no doubt he is. Why don't you believe it?
To each his own, because I have my mind is different than his.
Well, this is not like politics. No, I don't think this is like politics. You believe in one thing, you believe in something else. If this man is telling you that there's some truth in this, why is it your reluctance to believe it?
No, anything is possible.
Mm-hmm.
But personally, I would have to know much more about it than just to hear this one say that and that one say that. And a few of the people that I heard speak here, I must be very frank about it. They certainly did not impress me one bit. I don't think they knew what they were talking about. I mean, there was one speaker in particular.
Are you talking about Ellery Lanier?
I really don't know his name. I wouldn't want to embarrass anyone if they were around here.
No,
I just how are you? I've heard some speeches after this gentleman that just spoke a little while ago. He spoke very beautifully, and it was most interesting. I just sat there and listened to him. But there were one or two others that I really believed didn't know what they were talking about. They didn't took me very seriously.
Is this your husband standing behind you?
No.
Where is
he?
Jelly?
No, I think he really would like to.
Well, I will talk to him in a little while then, all right?
I hope I didn't say anything to offend anybody, but that was my honest opinion. I think you're all very lovely. This is very interesting. And, of course, you can always learn things.
In that last comment you made, you say that very lovely. Are you including me with
that? Oh, but definitely.
I think
it's very charming. It's very nice.
I'm looking for a
and so it's circling around me.
Me with the secret. I think
well, you are.
No,
well,
I'm not.
You're a very nice personality.
Yes, but I'm not connected.
I know you're not connected.
You're not
connected with that, but you are a charming personality.
Thank you very much.
Well, I think you really would love to speak to him.
Jelly, come over here a moment, please. Shelley, this is Ellery Lanier. Shelley,
Lana. When did I see my first flying saucer?
Yes.
Well, to be actually honest with you, I have not seen as yet my first flying saucer.
You look forward to seeing your first flying saucer?
Why not? Doesn't everybody? It's sort of mystical. It's that portion of our nature, to look for the unknown, something intangible that we would like to make tangible.
But Shelley, that is your name, Shelley?
No, Sheldon.
Sheldon.
Right.
Have you ever watched any insect hunters going after butterflies with a moth? Do you think there is any similarity between butterflies and flying saucers?
There might very well be. I think there would be more butterflies than flying saucers.
Have you found that there's a very interesting creature running around below our feet here? He's just escaped. I don't think he's a bureau or a tail. He seems to think he's what is called a canine on our planet.
Mm-hmm.
He's gone now. We can get back to the flying saucers. Have you heard anything today that was different from what you had ever heard before about flying saucers?
Well, actually, the only thing I heard, I've read several things, as has everyone else, you know. This tall chap, I've forgotten his name, from Oceanside, Long Island. I was just listening to him speak just now. And he had a sighting, and he described it in full, and he also spoke about dogs howling whenever he walked down the street. And I thought that was unusual. And he attributes it to an inner sense or a psychic knowledge or knowing of an animal as against a human being.
Yes. And what does that mean to you?
Well, the only thing it could mean is that perhaps in our civilized state, we have come so far from, well, the closeness to the ground or to the heavens or to the more divine things of life that we have lost it.
Did you hear Lester Del Rey talking to Mr. Brown a little earlier, several moments or so ago? Did you overhear that conversation, Sheldon?
Could you go on?
Oh, you didn't hear that. Well, there were some very conclusive, to the minds of certain of the listeners around this microphone, some conclusive evidence given as to why Mr. Del Rey is truly a Venusian.
Martian.
Martian?
Martian.
So, Lester, I'm sorry. I heard that you...
Not a canal Martian. Hi, Martian.
we were trying to find out whether it was possible to prove that Mr. Del Rey was... Mr. Del Rey's children.
How do you do?
If you wanted to have conclusive proof that this man came from another planet, what would you require for proof?
Well, I would like to know how you came here, to begin with. What sort of media did you use? Teleportation. Machine teleportation, of course. Machine teleportation. Flying saucer from sort?
Oh, no. That's an outmoded.
What do you use?
I get into the teleport and I'm here.
Well, what is a teleport?
Well, I don't know myself because we have security police on Mars, too, and they have kept their secrets from the general public. All I know is it works.
So you're the general public? You're not above the masses, so to speak?
I'm only one of the masses.
But then you must certainly have a great background to be able to come here and to be spoken to this way. In other words, why should ask you questions? You most certainly should give me... Well, not secrets, of course, but you could give me sufficient answers.
Of course.
I see. And you
might not understand them. They might not be incredible to you, but I could give you the answers, of course.
I see. Do they actually have canals on Mars?
No. As a matter of fact, the canals on Mars are an optical illusion we place there in the hope that sooner or later the human beings will get so interested they'll come over.
So that seems a roundabout way to do it.
When I refer to myself as not being a canal Martian, those people who originally put up the canals were actually a lower civilization. They didn't realize that sooner or later Earth would come over there anyway. And referring to a canal Martian, of course, means to one of a lower intellectual attainment or a lower standard of living. Either one now. It's a slang term now.
Oh, I see. It has become a slang term. But it wasn't years ago.
No. About 3,000 or 4,000 years ago when my father was alive, it was quite casually.
3,000 or 4,000 years ago.
What is the average lifespan on Mars? Depends on how long the one lives. It's a matter of interest. As a matter of fact, you could find the same thing if you were sufficiently interested in living.
Well, how long have you lived?
I am rather young. As a matter of fact, I've only lived 43 years.
43
but
years?
I, as a matter of fact, my catabolism is still running ahead of my anabolism.
However, you look like a 43-year-old Earthman.
Of course, that's the shape I assumed when I came down here.
Well, what is your shape on Mars?
Martian.
Well, what is Martian like?
To a Martian, he looks very...
No, to an Earthman.
Oh, well, the main difference, of course, is the wings. They are atrophied. They're no longer useful.
Uh-huh.
But before we come here, we have them surgically removed
uh-huh.
and stored for grafting when we get back.
And if I were to look at your back, would I see operational marks?
No. After all, we've had plastic surgery for 15,000-20,000 years.
In other words, if I were to look at your back, I couldn't see any possible difference in the skin on your face.
Well, physically, if you could find any difference, I certainly would complain to the surgeon who performed the operation.
My goodness. Well, why not give us this secret?
I think you have your secret. It's just a matter of the application of what's known now. But, frankly, this, what do you call it, this money that's used has so distorted the situation that the average surgeon is interested in acquiring this. This is one of the secrets that we'd very much like to know on Mars, just what money is. It seems to have certain values that we can't appreciate.
And then you feel that our position, not so much for mankind as the other monetary gain.
I don't think that they are interested, for instance, in trying to make a human being look other than a human being. It's a very wonderful experiment. I should think that they would be perfectly willing to sacrifice a few hundred thousand for it, but for some strange reason, they don't seem to.
John, is the AMA looking in on this process?
Yeah, I don't think anybody ever listens to
that. Well, I'm glad you said it, not I.
The AMA is what? The American Motor Association?
No. That's pretty good. So, how long have you been with us?
Let me translate. About 14 days. 2 weeks, I think it is.
2 weeks. Have you been here before?
I've been here several times. So as a matter of fact, I find it very enjoyable.
How do you think we're getting along? All in all.
You're getting along? I'm sorry to say exactly as to be expected.
You are sorry to say
it. I am very sorry.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Thank you. Let's start with... Start with this lady over here. Do you mind coming over, please?
What is your name?
Doris Bergman.
Doris, did you hear this conversation between these two gentlemen?
Yes, I was listening.
Supposing that you had the opportunity of interviewing an alleged Venusian named Martin, and he gave you the same answers that Lester Del Rey gave, would you believe that the man was a Venusian?
Well, I would think he was very clever, and I still think he's very clever to give the answers that he did, but I doubt whether I would be completely convinced, and don't ask me what would convince me, because I don't really know.
Isn't that peculiar, though, that we all... We would believe if we had sufficient evidence, and no one seems to be able to give the answer?
Well, I feel this way about it, but since the people on Mars are supposedly of a higher intelligence than we are, they could possibly know of some way to convince us, rather than us knowing of some way to ask them to prove it to us.
Is there any reason for them to want to convince us? Can you see of any good reason?
Well, I think that if they're missing amongst us, and just because we're accepting somebody else's word for it, they must be here for a reason, for a purpose, and it can't be just to mix amongst us anonymously. There must be a reason, and I should think that at some time they would want themselves to be known.
Have you traveled to any degree? In other words, have you traveled to foreign countries?
No.
How far? Where do you live?
Long Island.
Long Island. Have you ever been to... Chicago or the West Coast?
No, I haven't been west. I've only been south.
Where about that? Florida?
My
husband. No other place to go. Let me ask you this. When you go to Miami, do you run around and tap people on the shoulder and say, may I have a moment of your time? I want to tell you that I'm from Long Island and I'm going to prove it to you.
Well, no, because I'm not there to try and prove anything to anybody.
Well, I think that you implied in your last statement that if a person comes here from another planet, that their reason for coming here is to tell people that they're here and to prove it. Is that right?
Well, are you implying that their reason for coming here is the same as mine, for going to Miami?
Well, very frankly, I don't believe that anybody has arrived here from another planet.
Well, I don't either, but we're having a wonderful time.
No, but I would say this. I don't know what their reason would be. I know that your reason, when you decide to take a trip to Florida, is for a vacation and that you'll enjoy yourself. You're not going there to try to prove to somebody that you came from Long Island. So why is it necessarily so that a person coming from Venus or Mars would be interested in telling you or anybody else that they're from another planet? I mean, if they didn't look different, you'd assume that for the moment that they look like human beings.
Well, they might not at this point be ready to tell us they're from another planet, but I feel that if they had the scientific knowledge to make the trip, it wasn't made out of idle curiosity. There must have been a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I feel that at some time they might be ready, if they are here, to let us know.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Thank you very much. Good day.
We're out here at the first annual interplanetary spacecraft convention, the East Coast Convention. And I was just wondering, I don't know if we're picking up some of the music in the background. If we are, that's the music that you're hearing. If it is music, I haven't heard too much of it. There's a lot of people out here. I don't have an accurate count. Somebody told me there's possibly 2,000 people out here. I doubt it. But nevertheless, it's a beautiful day, and we have quite a crowd around us. We're standing near Howard Menger's house on this 100-acre farm, and we're going to try to talk to some additional people. Now, Kayla Kazan is here with us, and I'm going to have Kayla and possibly Sergeant Morris Paley talk with a few of the people. In fact, we'll let Kayla start. Do you want to hold this mic? You know how to hold this? Don't move it back and forth. And you guide it that way. Supposing you interview a couple of the women, Kayla. Would you mind coming over here, please?
Just come up here, please. What is your name, ma'am?
Fan Albert.
Fan Albert. And this is Kayla Kazan.
Kayla, do you want to talk to this lady a moment, please?
How do you do, Mrs. Albert? What made you come out to the space convention today?
Curiosity about what specifically?
Well, about space people and space ships.
Well, how long have you been here now? About how many hours?
Only, I'd say about 3 hours.
And have you listened to some of the speeches and looked at some of the exhibits?
No, I haven't seen many of the exhibits, but I've heard some of the speakers.
You've heard what they've had to say.
Yes.
How do you feel about it now?
Well, I'm not convinced. I didn't expect that to be convinced. As I say, I came merely out of curiosity, and I'm still curious.
Well, are you curious about something specifically, or just in terms of...
Well, specifically, whether there is such a thing as a space ship, and whether any of these people have sighted folks from other planets.
Have you heard any of the stories, Mrs. Alper, of some of the
I've
people who
I've heard one person speak about it. He didn't convince me, I'm sorry.
So, in other words, you're a skeptic.
I am, I'm afraid so.
And you haven't... And you haven't decided to go along with the space story?
Definitely not.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's more of the tape. And this is WOR Radio, your station in New York, runs in with the party line.
As I mentioned a moment ago, our good friend Sergeant Morris Bailey of the Perth Amboy Police Department was walking around the Menger farm, and he was looking for people that he thought would be of interest to our listeners. And he was talking to a few people, suggesting to them that we would like to have the opportunity to interview them. And here's Sergeant Paley bringing a lady to Kayla Kazan to interview.
Well, here's another young lady to interview.
Hello, would you tell us your name, please?
Yes, my name is Denise Parler.
And I understand, Denise, that you've read some science fiction.
Yes, I've been reading science fiction since I was 12 years old.
Well, that makes it about 8 years.
Yes.
You've done quite a bit of reading then.
Yes.
Well, would you like to talk about it a little bit? Tell us what
you
think.
Well, that's mainly why I'm here. I've read it so long, and most of what I've read, well, not most of it, but a lot of it seems to have a ring of truth to it. I really believe certainly the theories that they advance, although I've never seen actual proof of them. I don't take Howard Mungo's story as proof at all. I don't believe in the contacts. I would like to believe in the sighting. But I don't think I would actually believe in it, honestly, until I've undergone a contact myself.
You say you would like to believe in the sighting. Does this mean that you don't?
Well, I believe in the sightings by the pilots, and such people, the authorized people, the people who have some knowledge of what goes on in the skies, and who know of anything unusual. I would believe that.
I see. And what about your reaction to this afternoon's conference, as long as you've been here?
Well, I think you have a few crackpots here.
You're talking about the people who came as part of the conference, or the people who came
to the conference? Well, a couple of the speakers, and anything like this, anything unusual like this, it seems to attract a certain number of people who will go for it high. They believe everything that comes down the spot, you know, without any sort of proof. Some people just like to call attention to themselves. I think that's true. And I find it's a very good way, you know, to put a little band around your head with the antenna sticking out and the famous, you know. And I would like to see some of the science fiction writers themselves. I know some of them undoubtedly look upon this as a very fine commercial thing and do not believe in what they wrote, although they have the talent to write about it realistically. But I'd like to talk to some of the people who have written about it and who believe in it, besides old Howard career.
In other words, you're not satisfied with what you've seen
here
today.
No, I'd like to see your filter come down tonight. That's
why. Well, we're with you. We'd like to see you too. Thank you, Bernie.
I just want to say, introduce the person who's come around, a very delightful lady, Margaret Storm. It's a real pleasure seeing you here today. What is your reaction to this convention?
Well, I think it looks very, very exciting here. Certainly a beautiful countryside, and I think that some saucers should come to see us in this setting.
It certainly is a real pleasure having you here. I think many of these people have heard you on the party line sometime.
Yes, before. I guess so. Mm-hmm.
It's a great pleasure having you here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, I think
there's a lady here
would be very nice to talk to.
Miss Sylvia Adams.
Sylvia Adams.
Hi, Miss Adams. It's so nice to have you. Can you tell us where you came from?
I'm from Stony Point, New York, 7 miles below the Bear Mountains.
And you came all that way?
All by myself. I couldn't find anybody to come with me, so I was determined to come.
Well, I think it's just wonderful that you came. Can you tell us anything about how you feel this afternoon, having seen all of this?
Well, I'm tremendously interested, of course, to see all the people on the nightline. That's one thing. I'm highlight, I mean. And I am very much surprised to see so many people who are vitally interested enough to come to this convention.
Well, do you think their interest is possibly the same as yours, or do you think they all came because they were interested in flying saucers and Howard Hendry's story?
Well, I'm interested in the flying saucers. To this extent, I want to hear these people firsthand and see them. Because I'm not entirely sold. In fact, I'm not sold at all. I do feel that there is something up in the air. But whether it comes from outer space, that's something else again.
You don't know what this kind of something is.
No, I'm very doubtful that it comes from outer. May come from outer space.
Well, thank you very much. It's been delightful talking with you. And thank you for coming down.
Thank you.
And what is your name, please?
I'm Mrs. Joan Hearn from Lifefront.
And you came from Lifefront just for the convention?
Yes. We've been tracking down UFOs ever since we first heard about them years and years and years ago.
Were you out at the West Coast at that convention?
No, we didn't get that far, but I think my husband probably has every book ever published on. And we want very much to believe that they are coming from other planets.
Again, you, as other people have said, want to believe.
Yes.
That seems to me to indicate a doubt.
I will have to actually see one myself before I'll be able to say I believe in flying saucers. But I saw something this summer that brought me awfully close to it.
Well, what was that?
It was in New Hampshire, and it was a star low on the horizon, brighter than any other star. And no twinkle. My husband said it's moving. My friend and I said, I don't think so. We went up to get his telescope. By the time it came back, we realized that it was moving. We hit the telescope again, and then it went vertically up. And then took off, and then arced it right across the whole sky that we could see. About 1 minute later, another similar, it looked like a large bright star. It had no star shape or anything that I could describe. Followed in the same pattern. Now, there were no blinking lights, no red and green, nothing that made me think it was a plane. But I still don't want to delude myself. So, it could have been an optical illusion. But then, several minutes later, two jets followed in the same path, as if they were tracking. I don't know. Other people thought. I'm very curious.
But you wouldn't want to commit yourself.
I can't. Because I really don't know yet, but I'm certainly never going to stop trying to find out. And I think the thing that's most interesting about this convention is that I look around and I see other people doing the same thing. We're all wondering if we're on the lunatic fringe or are we a lot of really normal, intelligent people? And most of us seem to think when we look at each other that we're pretty average, normal, intelligent Americans on the face of some truth.
Well, I think that that's a pretty wise assumption that you've made, and we thank you for talking with us. Were you coming up, sir? What's your name, please?
Pete Rizikoff.
And did you come down just for the convention this afternoon?
Just for the convention, yeah.
And what did you think of what you've heard so far?
I'm very unhappy because I don't think there have been any really authentic sightings and words said today.
Just today, or don't you think there have been any at all, so far as your knowledge goes?
Well, as it happens, I believe flying saucers is not.
What makes you believe
it? Many sightings by qualified pilots with the witnesses and crowds seeing these things. They're maneuvering explanations that say they're sun dogs or moon dogs don't satisfy me. They maneuver. They are controlled. They follow planes.
Well, may I ask you, Pete, what makes these people qualified, these people that you say were qualified observers, qualified sightings?
Well, I consider a qualified observer a pilot, say, one who spends many hours of flying time. Now, he won't misidentify a commercial aircraft, and he won't be fooled by a mirage either.
You think that there's no chance he could be overtaken by an optical illusion of some kind, or have a momentary weakness of his own sight or something?
Well, I'm not one to think of sightings are erroneous or hoaxes or false.
But many pilots see these things, and I think there are several of them, maybe many, who are qualified in the armed force.
Well, thank you for your help us and practice for talking with us. We'll find out someday, I guess, whether your belief is so, is right.
Thanks very much.
Hello. Hello.
What's your name, please?
My name is Marion Bernhardt.
And where are you from?
I'm from Westfall at Rhode Island.
And how far did you have to come to get here?
Well, several hundred miles.
So your interest must be rather great.
Yes, I've been interested in unidentified flying objects for a long time, although I've never seen one.
What makes this interest continue? Is it just something that you'd like to know about?
I think when you realize that we ourselves are on the brink of space travel, that it is quite possible that some other planet has already mastered it. And if they were even a few hundred years ahead of us, it would be possible. So if we're on that stage ourselves, I don't see why people don't believe in them more wholeheartedly.
Well, are you willing to believe in them wholeheartedly?
Well, I think they're a possibility, although I haven't seen one.
But you won't believe in them, Nick. You're only saying that there's a possibility.
Well, I think most of us came here for a single purpose, that is, to hear the information given. And I mean, there are several different phases of it here. There is a group of what you might call the metaphysical, spiritualist trained to say that they are the metaphysical appearances of people from other planets. In other words, they materialize and dematerialize their bodies and appear in this manner. Then there is the positive thinking group, optimistic viewpoint.
Well, it's
part of the
world's problems.
You know what I mean?
Sheila, I think this lady's husband is present, and I think he has quite a disagreement with his wife concerning this whole subject.
Would you mind very much if we brought your husband in?
I think we ought to let Sergeant Morris Taylor question this gentleman as to how he differs with his wife on this whole question.
What is your name, sir?
My name is Robert Bernhardt.
And Mr. Bernhardt, I understand you came from Rhode Island. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And what is your interest here today?
Well, my interest is somewhat less than my wife, but I believe there is a possibility, although my interest is not strong as hers is.
A possibility of what, sir?
Well, when you consider that there are many other planets and other worlds, and it doesn't seem to me that God would have human beings or life as we know it only on one planet out of all that there is.
Once again, you're saying that we Earthlings are flattering ourselves to think that we're alone, initial, and there are no carbon copies. Is that what you mean?
That's exactly what I mean.
How would you tell if there were one of these persons on Earth?
I don't think some of the people who claim to be are.
Supposing, sir, I said that I were from the moon, how would you tell I weren't?
Frankly, I wouldn't believe you.
What would you want as evidence?
Something, some minor miracle.
There again, sir, leads another question. What do you consider a miracle?
Well, lift yourself off the ground or do something a little different.
If I were on the moon, sir, I would be able to leap over barriers because of the pull of gravity. Here I am bound by Earth's laws and regulations.
You put up a very good argument.
It's not an argument, it's a statement of fact. You see, I've come from the dark side of the moon, and for proof of it, I show a blue eye with a brown spot, the right eye. A blue eye with a brown spot. This brown spot being caused by peeping through a hole from the dark side to the light side. What other proof would you want, sir? You spin the eye and you notice that the eye is brown in a spot.
I think you were born with it on Earth.
Yes, I was born here by teleportation.
Well, I mean, I can't argue with you because you say this and I say differently. But...
Well, let me explain to you just how I did get here. Unlike Lester coming here from Venus or Mars by his means, I came through mechanical teleportation. You Earthlings have raised such a howl over high taxation that we harness this noise for electrical impulses to run our machine. This machine, in turn, has sent me here.
Well, can I say one thing? You're saying this with a very straight face, and you're very serious, and yet you must be connected with this radio station, right? You're saying this to draw an answer out of me, but your act, so to speak, is very convincing, which means that people who act that way, too, are not so. In other words, if you are from the radio station, which you probably are, then you're putting on an excellent act. I almost believe you, but I don't.
Well, sir, I'm not from the radio station. I might say that I was sent here to more or less undermine a police department. You see, I am posing as a sergeant of police in a community in the state of New Jersey. I am in no way connected with the radio station.
Fred, Ellery tells me that you told some people about some unusual experiences that you've had. You've had some sightings, is that true?
Well, I saw something. I don't know what it was, but I couldn't explain it. Quite a while ago, about 1950-51, I'm not sure, I saw two lights in the sky. I had never seen anything like that before. I don't think that it was an airplane. It didn't blink. It traveled extremely fast. I called up the airport to find out if they had any aircraft in the vicinity at the time, but they said they had nothing flying around that they knew of, so I more or less dismissed it. I have, however, been interested in flying saucers ever since I saw these objects, wherever they were.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Fred.
Thank you.
Let me talk with this gentleman over here. What is your name, sir?
Sean White.
Saul, how long have you been out here today?
Oh, since about 3 o'clock.
Did you hear any of the lectures?
Well, I've received a good many impressions. Although
telepathic?
No. Just observations, but I can't say that I have been impressed.
You haven't been impressed, that's
no.
What you're saying.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
There's a rather heterogeneous group here, made up of all types of individuals, with all types of motives and backgrounds. But I think there's one thing in common, and that I'm sure they're all people of goodwill. And what appealed to us mostly was the remarks of Major Ahole and I think Weatherhill in his implications that here was an opportunity for people to forget their petty differences here, to perhaps arrest the tendency towards our self-destruction, and to develop a large point of view. Certainly, scientifically, interstate travel is quite possible. It's intellectually tenable. The famous astronomer Harlow Shapley, by very, very conservative estimates, claims that there are possibly as many as a billion planets capable of supporting life. Now, I just want to get down to a personal experience. I happen to be a pilot with some 30 years' experience. I have a plane based over the Westchester County Airport. And on one occasion, I happened to be around twilight, taking off towards the west. I encountered a brilliant elliptical, bright golden object. The passenger with me noticed it, and his first reaction, by golly, this is a flying saucer. We stared at the thing and flew directly at it, and as we flew, the thing turned slowly into a haze of diminishing size and appeared to be proceeding away from us at a tremendous speed. After a while, that same object turned into what would be just a dull leaden color, and then it hit us. We were looking at a lake. The lake was between us in the air and the sun, and our angle with respect to the lake was such that this lake, which is round, was somewhat foreshortened and gave the appearance of an ellipse.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've taken other people up when conditions were just right, with the sun setting, and we could duplicate this experience. And for all the world, to anyone uninitiated, they might assume this to have been a flying saucer.
I'd like to ask you one question. Why are you so sold on the lecture that was given by Major Ahole this afternoon?
I accept only portions of it. I mean, I gather certain inferences from his lecture, which I hold with. In other words, it borders on what you might call a new religion, without the, perhaps, the superstition, without the ugliness, without the brutality that we have in this world.
Would you say, then, if this is the start of a new religion, would you say that the flying saucers could be labeled as the packaging?
Well, it might start to
the window dressing,
thinking mm-hmm. beyond their own little sphere, get them outside of their own egotism and personal attachment.
I gather, then, that you're implying that you don't believe the story
but you think it's a nice way of presenting something that may be of value for people.
I'm not sure about the stories. I'm inclined to disbelieve the actual stories and accountings of landing, but I do maintain that scientifically this is rational.
In other words, this is something like telling your youngster about Santa Claus. This is great.
No, not at all. Not at all. Not that I have any aversion to Santa Claus for children, you see, because it's certainly not
a lot. For flying saucers for adults.
That's right. It isn't akin to the Santa Claus story at all. No, this is a
Red Riding Hood?
No. This is a definite possibility. Definite, very definite possibility. And certainly within all the bounds of what we can anticipate.
Is that last a definite possibility?
Well, I don't know why you keep bringing in Santa Claus, because, as I say, I think it's a story,
a pure fairy tale.
Santa Claus.
I'm saying Santa Claus.
I'm sorry. It's a fairy tale just to keep children happy, and I'd be the last one in the world to deprive them of this superstition.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing for children. Of course, we can't always act and behave like children, nor do we want to accept the beliefs of children.
You think a person who believes the stories that have been reported here and in the various magazines and newspapers and books, such as the Adamski story and Howard Menger's story and Van Tassel, do you think that those stories, if a person believes them, that we could consider these people to be, let's say, a little childish?
Well, they probably believe them. They're quite sincere about them, and they go out recounting their experiences. And
I'm not talking about the people who tell the stories, the people who hear them, who listen to these stories and believe them. Would you classify these people as being a little childish or superstitious?
Just your opinion, sir. Well, I would expect them to have a certain amount of skepticism and to ask for certain proof.
You haven't answered my question.
Well, in a way, Bob,
if you'd rather...
Yes, I have to hedge, because I can't give a pat answer to that at all.
So I'm not asking you for a 100% answer. I'm asking you what I consider to be a simple question. I'm not trying to press your question.
Yes.
But let me rephrase it again. First of all, are you acquainted with the Adamski story?
Yes.
Howard Menger's story?
Not very well.
All right, let's stick with Adamski. You buy the Adamski story?
I think there's a small percentage of plausibility in it. I don't buy it wholeheartedly.
What part of the Adamski story do you buy? Let me ask you this. Do you believe that Adamski
actually contacted Adamski?
No,
they did. No. Any more than I believe the remarks of a speaker right here on this ground that I happened to hear about 10 minutes ago, wherein I just stepped in while he was telling some sort of a story, whereby a pilot in an airplane met with a collision at a height of 7,000 feet. His plane disintegrated, and he found himself floating down the ground without a parachute, and he landed perfectly safe. And while he was on the ground, he saw little green creatures that resembled asparagus there. And they told him that he had nothing to worry about.
Let me interrupt you for just a moment, sir. Was that a tall young man telling the story of the tall tale? I mean, a tall man telling the story?
Just a moment. I wonder if somebody within the hearing of my voice out here would be kind enough to see if you can spot that young man.
Is he close enough? Unfortunately, I cannot leave the mic. Would somebody be kind enough to get that young man to ask him to come over here a moment?
You're probably familiar with the story?
No.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you'll wait, will you wait for just a moment?
Let me talk with this lady over here a moment.
This gentleman here, I said. All right, what is your name, sir?
Who is J. Albert?
What do you think of the day out here, sir?
I found it very interesting.
Do you believe any of it?
No, not really. I'm just in touch with the same kind of the human mentality involved in the human expression coming out, and that's a sort of curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And the expression of ego is very important, and different people have to express in different ways to elevate themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But inferiority is one of the curses of the human mind. And I like to observe the curses of the human mind.
Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate your comment. This is WOR Radio, your station in New York. Long John with the party line, 710 on the dial.
And we're around from midnight to 5:30, 6 mornings during the week. Monday mornings we get started at 1, continue through to 5:30. That means we're around for 37 and a half hours a week. And now back to the tape.
Well, we're back here again. When I say we're back here again, we had to stop for a moment because we ran out of tape. We're working with a portable recorder out of the... It's the first interplanetary spacecraft convention. I'll say one thing. It's been a wonderful day out here, and I've had the pleasure of meeting many people. Actually, my purpose of coming out to the convention here is not to talk to the mystical Tom Sawyer artists in Brooklyn or Howard Menzies or any of the other people that have.
I want to remind our listeners that you will hear a peculiar sound underneath the tape. It's sort of a roof, 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 sort of a pulsating sound. I was told when I was out there that a number of other people had that same tone on their recorder about during the same time that I was doing the recording. This was maybe around 4 or 5 in the afternoon. Since then, the mystic barber told us he had some ray machine out there, something like that. I doubt it. I think there was just a mechanical defect. But continue to listen, please.
A couple of minutes ago. And just in case some listeners have joined us during the past few minutes, may I ask you again, sir, to tell us your name?
Saul White.
And, this is really a tough one. They call me Long John. I feel like Short John at the moment. What is your name, sir?
Alexander McNeil.
Well, Al, I wonder if you want to cooperate. I can't ask this gentleman to stretch himself, but I can ask you to, sort of bend down with it. You want to come up a little bit, please?
Right, sure.
I don't know if you could do me a favor. Could you give me a chair there? Is there a chair or something? It'll make it a little more convenient because I don't want to lose the level chair. You can stand, you're younger. We'll let Alex sit down. Alex, you want to sit down? I think you'd be just a... No, get up a little bit. Maybe you can just put your foot up there to sort of rest and slouch down a little bit. Would that be easier?
No.
Right. Now, we don't want to take too much time in this. However, I understand you were telling a group of people that they're sort of gathering around you to hear this unusual tale. You told them something about a plane that cracked up 7,000 feet in the air. You tell the story, will you?
Yes, Long John. A plane flying over Atlanta, Georgia, a civilian pilot. He was taking his test up in the air for the first time. His name is Fred Regan, and he was flew it with a company down in Atlanta. He was flying this plane 7,000 feet up in the air when he saw this round-like object in the sky, and he started to go after it, knowing a little bit about flying saucers, hearing on the radio and in newspapers. And this object, as he started to go after it, did not look like a lounge object. It looked like a disc-shaped object. And he heard about these sources. He had rose to 7,000 feet after this object, and he made a pass at it the first time, and the UFO stayed away from it at one time. Then all of a sudden he made another dive, and this time it was fatal to himself because the UFO went directly through his plane, through the tail of the plane. The object seen the man falling free of the plane, and the pilot had no parachute at all. As the story goes, as I have heard it, this man saw the farm fields and mountain area around coming up to meet him, and then all of a sudden he stopped dead in the sky. He had reached an elevation not very far from the ground at the time. This man seemed to be moved straight up in the sky very slowly, as if held by some type of a grip. And this man was taken into this black room, which had a blue light, which went on and off, back and forth, across the top of the craft. And this man was a microphone switched on, and the man was told that not to be afraid, that the Earth was under constant watch by the special type of craft, and that they could not return him his plane, but they would give him something better, which he could obtain through life. He had been given the information not to touch the sides of the craft at all, not to find out what it's made of, and he was sitting on this tank, or a trunk-like object. It was like rubber, but very hard. And this man had a microphone switched on, or a switch was thrown, and a human voice, a very intelligent voice, spoke, and he says to this man, "We cannot give you back your plane, but we'll give you something else in return. We will give you the cure to cancer, and that cancer will be cured to you in a foreign form." So all of a sudden, he screamed and he blacked out, and he was returned to the ground unharmed and very safe after the experience. After the experience was told, a popular ambulance appeared and police, and this man was taken to a hospital, and he was checked up, and they did not believe his story, and he was put away in the sanitarium for the insane in Atlanta, Georgia. So this man, after he told the story to reporters and everything, he was detained for a while. And then he was shipped off to the institution. A year later, he died of atomic radiation and brain tissue. This was reported by the Atlanta Police Department, which was in court grip. That is all I can tell you about this story.
Would you like to question about the story?
Well, this is quite a mouthful to swallow. First of all, I doubt if a student, you said it was a student pilot on a solo flight, usually flying a craft that probably moves at 75 or 100 miles an hour, would dare to go after a UFO or anything much larger than himself. Usually a student wants to stay away from any other object in the sky, I assure you. The rest of the story about him floating down the ground or being intercepted and entered into a spacecraft isn't at all tenable to me. Although it may be possible, scientifically, at some day, for such a craft to exist, it may be possible someday to have an anti-gravity means whereby a falling body can be arrested in this fall. This is possible someday. But I'm inclined to be skeptical about the whole story. It's just too fantastic, and it reads too much. It sounds too much like a flight of the imagination.
It would make a good short story. It's a nice yarn.
Well, there is one thing, as I said. This person was on his first solo flight. It was not a young boy. It was an old man, really a younger man in size. And that this man had a little bit of flying experience. But it was his first time to take solo flight in the sky alone, by himself. He had been up with instructors and everything before this. He had thought that he might as well see what was going on in the sky. He wanted to see what it would look like from the ground. And there is another thing I can say, is the anti-gravitational field. If you know that at Wright-Patterson Field, Dayton, Ohio, the United States government is now testing the anti-gravity field. It cost $3 million to build. It is a special room that will defy gravity, and they'll probably use it on the rocket trip to the moon for man in its first flight very shortly.
Where is this information obtainable?
This information is obtainable, but from the United States Air Force.
Do you have any comment on that, sir? This is also possible someday, yes. I try to have a rather broad and open mind about these things. My background has been technical, and I say that this is someday possible. As a matter of fact, I did resent some of the remarks of Major Aholt, where he kind of poo-hooed the influence gravity has on us. Gravity is the means by which we remain on a path. Gravity prevents us from extending our flight into space. And then he shows out the term electromagnetic propulsion. Now, actually, the two are very, very closely related. In fact, mathematically, they're treated the same. The physical laws involved in gravity are quite the same as the behavior of the electromagnetic field, you see. And it strikes me as, first, the inconsiderate remarks of a person not well-grounded in time.
Do you have any fingers on this temperature, though?
I don't believe any of this at all.
I'd like to ask Mr. O'Neill whether or not you are just reporting the story of Regan, the pilot,
or whether you really believe the actual story.
I definitely believe the Regan story to be actual fact, because if I remember, a man now in South America, in Brazil, is now coming up with a cure for cancer through a jungle drug, which the natives may have the answer for in Brazil.
Does this have anything to do with Mr. Regan?
It might have a lot to do with Mr. Regan, because flying saucers have been now seen in Peru, landing on the Peruvian desert.
You say it might have, but you don't know of any definite connection between this doctor in South America and Mr. Regan, do you?
No, I don't believe the doctor in South America has anything to do with it, but I believe the natives in South America may have given the cure to the UFOs.
The natives gave the cure to the UFOs rather than the other way around.
Right, and they may have given something in return.
Well, this is very interesting. Apparently, we have to teach the UFOs instead of the other way around.
I really don't see any connection between the work of this doctor in South America and the fact that Regan was given the secret of the cancer cure.
Well, he wasn't given the cancer cure secret. He was only given the cure to be cured, because he could not return his plane.
Did he suffer from cancer?
He had cancer of the lung. And there was one other thing that was said about the Regan story. Regan never worked near an atomic lab in his life.
Thank you very much, Mr. O'Neill. And I didn't get
White.
You, Mr. White. Thank you.
Thank you very
right
much.
Off.
If I'm not mistaken, I think that the next portion of the tape that we're going to listen to, Valerie had the mic and had one piece of equipment in one section of the grounds, and let's listen to it now.
Well, we're here out on the farm of Howard Menger. The evening is thrilling on us. It is getting very dark. A planet has just appeared in the sky. If Mr. Howard Menger or Dave Field are available, I would like to know the name of the planet that is visible at the time. Bob Mantler, what planet is visible on the horizon now? There is a bright light above the horizon. I can't quite make it out amongst all these people around me, Mr. Mantler. What planet is it? It isn't Venus. I don't think it is a planet, Venus. And it doesn't look like Mars. Could it be Mars? Would you get the telescope? Would you find out who has the telescope and check on what planet? We may be receiving some vibrations from another world right now. Are there any people here who are receiving vibrations? Hold on, Miss. Have you been here at the show today? What is your name? You don't come in? Well, you must be a Venusian, I assume that. Yes? Well, we have just spoken to a Venusian, which is very lovely. She's known, and she has no comments on planet Earth, which doesn't speak too well for us. Hello, what is your name? We have lots of Venusians here today. Have you listened to the speakers at the show today?
Yes. Mm-hmm. You came late, though. Did you find them interesting?
Oh, definitely. Right.
Are you interested in flying saucers?
That's why I'm here, obviously.
Mm-hmm. You believe in them?
I don't know.
You're skeptical. What is your name? Rita Bodson. Where do you come from, Rita?
Rockin Lake.
Rockin Lake?
No, Rockin County. Oh, well, Rockin County.
That is New York State, I believe. Mm-hmm. And has anyone in Rockin County observed flying saucers that you know of? Have you observed any?
I haven't observed anybody up there that's very interested, actually.
Uh-huh. And, What does flying saucers mean to you? Can you tell us what the word means to you? Why would you come out to
flying saucers? Flying saucer just simply means an object that we can't explain that's coming from this earth.
From this earth? Yes, in another.
I say we can't explain it as something that comes from this earth.
Yes.
And in any shape or form.
Have you read any of the books about flying saucers?
Yes, I have.
Which books have you read?
Not actually flying saucers. I've read a certain amount of science fiction, but I wouldn't classify it as simply flying saucers.
I have just been informed from our control board that the planet Jupiter has come up above the horizon. It is visible now in the darkening sky. And now we can get back to our visitors. I don't personally feel any special vibrations coming down from Jupiter, but it is very lovely up there. The other stars could be coming out very soon. It's a very beautiful evening. We've had a very lovely day here.
And everything?
Yes. You say that you have not observed flying saucers.
Oh, no, I've never observed anything that I could possibly comment on.
What would you think the effect would be on this planet Earth if people from other planets suddenly started to land and did not have hostile intentions but were friendly to us? What attitude do you think people would take toward these visitors from outer space?
I think there's a great deal of, there'd be a great deal of receptivity in the country. I think people want it very much, hope and wish for it as their sort of one salvation.
Do you think it would open a new chapter in civilization and getting into contact with other worlds outside of our own?
Certainly, I think it would solve all the problems we seem to have here now, if they weren't hostile.
I see. Well, are you going to look for flying saucers yourself?
Oh, I'm waiting. I'm ready. Anytime they want to contact me, I'm very, very ready.
Well, are you just going to wait for them, or are you going to go out and look for them?
I look.
Well, it's a very beautiful evening tonight. We may have some good fortune and observe some saucers landing right here on the farm. Thank you very much. We take a nice talking to you. Well, what is your name, sir?
My name is Phil Simmons.
Mr. Simmons, have you heard the speakers at this conference today?
Yes.
Have you had some interest in the science practice of this
yourself? Oh, yes, I'm very interested in it. Have you been very interested? Oh, I say, see, that first time Long John had this recording done down at John Rock Airport in about 1967. May or April. I've been interested since
then. Have you done any observing or guessing for sources yourself?
Yes, I have, but I've never seen any.
You have never seen any. Are you interested in the subject of other worlds? Are you interested in astronomy?
No, I'm...
Mr. Simmons, what do you mean, Mr. Simmons?
Simmons.
I didn't ask you where you come from. Are you from this part of the country, Mr. Simmons?
I'm from East Orange, New Jersey.
East Orange, New Jersey.
Yes.
And what is your opinion of the people that you have heard speaking here today? I'm saying tonight, it's already evening, but they've been speaking all day long.
Well, I thought it was very interesting, and that they sound like they were telling the truth.
They sound like they were telling you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Have you, sir, as a child, enjoyed reading fairy tales and legends?
No, I don't think so.
You didn't enjoy fairy tales?
No.
You know, many children do enjoy reading stories which they know are not true. And someone has suggested today that all the stories about flying saucers are just fairy tales for grown-ups, something to entertain them with. What would you think of that kind of opinion?
No, I don't think it's something that is going to become a real thing someday. I say within another 5 or 10 years, we'll be here.
Would you yourself be interested in flying to other planets?
I wouldn't mind. As long as I got back in one seat.
Well, do you think there could be a guarantee of such a flight?
Well, as long as I got back, I'll say it'll be okay.
Do you think Columbus had a guarantee when he set out across the ocean?
No, I don't think so.
Well, you don't sound as though the spirit of adventure isn't alive in you the way it had been people in the past. I mean, we want to have a guarantee to fly to the moon and we're sure we'll get back in one piece.
Oh, like if I would fly to the moon with somebody from another planet, you know?
Yes.
Like somebody that is a much higher being than that. Like if I would say, I want to be the first one to the moon from this planet. I want to go down to Cape Canaveral and fly one of those first rockets to the moon. I wouldn't. But if I was sure, you know, if I meet somebody that's from another planet, you know, they say they're much more higher intelligent than
me. You would be willing to undertake a risk, a certain element of risk that might get killed in flying to another planet and you're really sure that you get back alive? Well, just a slim chance. Would the spirit of adventure urge you to take that slim chance?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, I'm very glad to hear that. Yeah. It's a nice talking to you. Hello, sir. What is your name?
Ralph.
Have you attended the meeting today? Have you listened to the
speech? No, we just got here a couple hours ago.
Are you a enthusiast for the subject of flying saucers?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us something about how you became interested in flying saucers?
Magazines and Long John. I listen to Long John mostly every night.
Have you listened to the Long John show?
Yeah.
For quite some time? How long have you listened, sir?
Well, about a year or so. Off and on.
Mm-hmm. And which of the reports about flying saucers did you find the most interesting or the most...
Excellent, random, I suppose.
Menu story sounds interesting.
And, like that?
Sounds
dreadful.
Accurate, or it's
possibility. Yes. And, did you hear, Mr. Menu's descriptions that he had given on the show?
As a matter of fact, I believe I was talking to Howard some weeks ago and was asking him about some of the buildings on the moon. Did you hear any of the descriptions?
No, I didn't
hear
that. I just heard him on Jack Parr one night.
Oh, you did see him on Jack Parr,
yeah.
I see. And, let me ask you, sir, have you thought of the flying saucers situation in terms of life on other worlds in contrast with life on this world?
Yeah, I believe it is.
Do you think that would be very much different from our knowing about life on the other side of the planet Earth?
Well,
you know, there's a continent of Europe and a continent of Asia, and there are people there. They're on the other side of the planet Earth. What difference would there be if we found people on other planets?
Well, they could be beyond Earth, or they could be a village in their language. And it's a possibility that I believe there's some that's brighter than we are, and there's some that's not as bright as we are.
Well, have you known of individuals who can take an automobile apart and put it together and repair a broken automobile engine without having any training in engineering? People who just pick it up.
Oh, yeah, that's a possibility, yeah.
And these people are not necessarily trained scientists.
No.
Do you think it is possible for technicians and mechanics and other planets to put the rubber on the device to fly to Earth and yet have these people quite ignorant of other aspects of learning?
Yeah, that's a possibility. Mm-hmm.
And that it might be possible that the inhabitants of flying saucers might even be rather stupid persons who are all confused and don't know what's what and have come to this Earth and can't figure out who to contact, and they go around contacting someone here and someone there, and everything is all mixed up. They don't know where they're about. Do you think that is a possibility?
Yeah, well, they just like now. We have telephones and television, but an ordinary person couldn't put a television together or couldn't put an airplane together or anything like that. But it still takes smart people. There's smart people here, and there's smart people on other planets.
Thank you very much, sir. It's been nice talking to
you.
Are we still on the tape there? I can't see through the darkness. The evening has fallen.
Oh, here's the
picture. Thank you, Lillian. I would like to get the wire that is trailing across this glass from under our feet. Mr. Rapolti, how do you do, sir? Where did you say you were from, Mr. Rapolti?
Port Pennsylvania.
Have you been here through the entire day, sir?
I've been here since about 9 o'clock this morning.
And have you observed any flying saucers landing on the premises, sir?
No, sir, I haven't. I might say I'm waiting in expectation.
You are, and
mm-hmm.
What kind of expectation would you say you were waiting in?
Which might say, when you're expecting something, you can't really define it.
Have you? Excuse me, sir. Yes,
Allery, this gentleman has something very interesting to tell you about a friend of his in the Pentagon.
Very interesting. Mr. Rapolti, instead of going through the questions of what happened today, tell us about your experience at the end.
Well,
I didn't quite get the details, but he just turned me in on this.
A friend of mine is a lieutenant colonel for the Army, and he works for the Pentagon. And it was his duty to send up the spotting team in Pittsburgh on the Sputnik. And I don't want to reveal his name, of course.
Well, you don't have to.
But he told me that the Pentagon has been in contact with people from outer space and that there are such things as flying saucers. And I believe in it because...
Well, this friend of yours definitely stated that he has information that the Pentagon has had contact with people from outer space.
Yes, he says there have been men of high authority that have actually been taken on trips there.
Men of our government
who have gone there to outer space. But they do not want to reveal this because they value their jobs and their positions, and they're afraid of public opinion.
Yes, sir. Have you yourself observed any of these...
No, unfortunately, I haven't.
This is the information that you have.
This, you might say, is second-hand information. But the gentleman I got it from, I feel it's quite credible.
You're quite competent.
Yes, I do.
And this is information that you cannot give the full details of. It is a security question, undoubtedly.
I can tell you this much, that due to the fact that the individuals, the high-ranking individuals, would not reveal this, the visitors, I would say, from outer space, working their way down in the government from the top flight to the next branch on down, to the average man.
Well, Mr. Rapolti, I think that in terms of security, I don't want you to reveal any more of this information. We may be going on grounds that we are not permitted to tread on. So it's been very nice talking to you, and thank you very much, sir.
This is WOR Radio, your station in New York, Long John with the party line.
We ran out of tape while Ellery was talking to Mr. Rapolti.
How was that pronounced? Repulsive. And, of course, at that time, I suppose I was thinking about doing a French, like, you know, same
W-O-L-Radio, your station in New York, 710 on the dial. However, we found that Mr. Rapolti's story was so interesting that we asked him to tell us more after we had a new reel on our recorder. So here's Ellery and Mr. Rapolti again.
Mr. Rapolti, a moment ago I was mentioning the fact that you have certain information which goes against security regulations, but I think we can ask you about some of the experiences and information that your friend gave you.
That's right.
More of that wouldn't go against security.
Well, he didn't go into too much particulars about it, but he said that high-ranking officials of the United States government had been contacted by visitors from outer space, and that actually they had traveled from our planet Earth to outer space.
Officials of our government had traveled
of our government
to outer space with people who had come from outer space.
That's right.
Mr. Rapolti, is your friend a reliable individual?
That is something that I personally would have to evaluate. I feel that he is a very credible individual. I feel that he is confident because the government wouldn't have sent him to Pittsburgh to send up one of these Sputnik scouting teams.
Is he an astronomer?
Yes, sir, he is.
Is he a professional astronomer, sir?
With the Army, yes, he is.
Well, that would mean that he is competent to observe objects in the sky and report on them accurately. That is
your
training.
Yes, sir.
Now, could you tell me some more of what he has told you in terms of these people from outer space?
Well, from what I've gathered in conversations with him, our high-ranking officials will clam up because they don't want to talk about it. So, actually, these visitors of outer space have come on down the chain of command until they finally reach the average people, like Mr. Menger here and various people throughout the United States, who have nothing to lose by telling the people this thing. I mean, they're not going to be thrown in jail this year. I mean, they have nothing to lose, a family to lose. That's why they can tell these things and talk to people about it, because, I mean, they don't hold a high-ranking office.
Well, Mr. Rapolti, did your friend tell you how people from outer space can just come in through the United States of America and move around and meet people?
Unfortunately, as far as the technical data is concerned, I don't think I could actually fathom it too much because I don't think I'm technically, I can adapt it that
much. Mr. Rapolti, what you have just told us indicates that if what you have told us is true, this would indicate that almost all the various stories of contacts with people from other planets had not only a grain of truth, but are true.
I feel that's quite terrible.
This is an attempt on the part of these space people to make some kind of contact with the people in the United States.
Definitely. That was my reason for coming here to this East Coast convention, feeling that finally things are really going to, the truth is really going to be laid out to the public.
Where did you come from, Mr. Rapolti?
George, Pennsylvania.
And you came here because you expected some truth to be revealed
finally. Very definitely. I thought that maybe there might be government men here, government people here, but there might be something to it.
Uh-huh.
I actually might talk about
it. Can you tell us something about these people from outer space? Did they actually go inside the Pentagon? Were they inside the government building talking to our officials?
Well, my friend, all he said was that they were contacted. I don't know whether they physically went in or how it was. But he said that they were contacted.
Did he tell you how these people from outer space spoke to our government officials?
Yes, he mentioned the fact that they do speak English and they do learn the languages the same way we would learn a language in school, through study of the tongue. They study the same way as we do.
Did the strange story imply that these people came to Earth by flying saucer devices?
Spacecraft is actually what he identified. I mean, I can't call it a flying saucer. I mean, that's just a term we give it. But a spacecraft, you see.
A spacecraft.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the latest information that you got from your friend, Mr. Rapolti?
Well, I'd say it was about a month ago that he told me that when he revealed all these things, actually, when he was talking in this conversation, this never came out before. It was the first time he'd ever talked.
Is this confidential information, sir?
Well, he talked to me about it, so I don't know whether it is confidential or not, because I talked to a few people here today who seem to know the same thing as I do. The officials have been contacted. There are people here right now in this lot who know the same information that I do.
Well, what do you think can be the purpose of these people from outer space in coming here and not being able to contact our officials and going around and just talking to people everywhere.
Well, I
happened to me. What is the point of this?
I talked to one fellow today who said that the people from these visitors from other planets, a series of 12 planets, of which we are the lowest form of intelligence, and they want to bring us up to a par with them. They want to actually educate us. You see, to bring them up so far, they're afraid that they might have wars and things and completely destroy us.
Well, why would they want to do anything good for us in particular? Is there some reason for this?
Well, there must be some reason behind it.
Well,
another gentleman I talked to on the same subject today said that they're afraid that if we should come to a nuclear war, whereby there is a chain reaction of nuclear explosions, it will completely disrupt the solar system to an extent that it might endanger their lives on other planets. Now, this is a scientific fact. This has been stated in magazines that if there is a definite chain reaction set up by three or more hydrogen bombs dropped on the planet Earth, that there will be definitely a destruction of a complete planet.
Well, I can see the point. I recall just about a month or two, maybe 3 months ago, an article in the New York Times in which a Norwegian or one of the Scandinavian country scientists put in an official protest somewhere in the United Nations against sending any rockets to the moon containing an atomic explosive. In terms of the atomic explosion on the moon's surface, setting the moon off its orbit to a certain extent, which would create torrential floods and havoc right here on the planet Earth.
That seems to be the same idea that would happen if Earth was disengaged from orbit. It would also send out vibrations that would actually send other planets into disorder, of course.
Mr. Rapoti, from what you know, do you think these people are in a position, these people from outer space are in a position to stop us before we can create such a cosmic cataclysm or...
I feel that
if they
definitely have an interest in our planet Earth, they will definitely stop it. If they have no interest, I don't think they'd spend the time coming down here and talking about it.
Well, Fred, does that mean we can relax and not be worried about our planet being blown up now? I mean, they've got to make it safe for us.
Look at it this way. Now, I'm talking to another gentleman here today who said that we do have scientists on the moon. Now, but there are Russian, Chinese, Japanese, and American scientists on the moon right now.
Well, you are talking now, I believe, about are you talking about Mr. Menger or one of the other gentlemen?
No,
I don't know who it is you're talking about.
There's a gentleman that I met here today and talked to who's connected with Mr. Colton and Mr. Carr. Yes, that's their name.
I see.
Okay, and he related to me that they're... he has some...
Mr. Rapoti, may I ask you what your training and background are in?
I'm an interior decorator. And this is actually a hobby of mine.
Have you observed the stars? Have you gone into study of the planets?
Yes, I have.
Are you familiar with the planets in the sky? Can you recognize them when you see them?
No, I don't believe I'm much. As I said, I'm just an amateur on it right now. I mean, it's sort of a small hobby with me, but the interest is there.
Well, Mr. Rapoti, it's been a great pleasure talking to you, and I feel much better now that I know that in case we are about to blow up the planet Earth, these beings will save us before it happens.
It's possible.
I am very much more relaxed than I have been for years now. Thank you again, sir. Nice talking to you. What is your name, sir?
I'm Lewis Muller.
Lewis Muller?
Yes, sir.
And where do you come from, Mr. Muller?
I live in Newark, and I was born in Passaic. I'm a student in Bloomfield College, Bloomfield, New Jersey.
What are you studying, sir?
I'm studying physics, majoring in physics.
Have you listened to the Long John show?
On many occasions. I've also taped some of the, some of the broadcasts to study, because I find his programs very enlightening. Most of the time, they're very enlightening and very amusing at times. You're undoubtedly aware of this yourself.
Yes, I am quite aware that I have participated in some of the programs. Let's get back to the flying saucers and your interest in physics. Did you hear any of our programs in which we had certain physics instructors who complained about the accuracy of the science discussed on the Long John show? Have you heard any of that on the show?
I don't recall any programs of that nature, but I have heard Howard Menger and his wife, Miss Baxter, on the air. I've heard other gentlemen... I've heard Long John talking to Sergeant Morris Haley. I've also heard him talking to one of the other gentlemen. I can't think of the name now, who's been involved in this matter. They've spoken about Otis T. Carr and to discuss his research.
Now, as a physics student, what year are you in your study of physics?
First year, sir. I finished the first semester in June and resuming on Monday.
I'd like to ask you one or two questions. We have a very famous dad in the kitchen on this show, a man of exquisite intellect, who was also a lyric poet. And he was mentioning to me some interviews he had today with some science students. And this is in line with the question of whether the Long John show has incompetent people discussing science. What is your opinion of the scientific questions discussed on the show?
I think in general, first of all, let me make this statement. In general, Long John himself does his utmost to prevent the questions and the answers given from becoming wild. Furthermore, generally speaking, the vast majority of the people that I've heard discussing science with him seem to have a pretty firm and accurate background insofar as I can tell. And I don't claim to know a great deal about science. I'm very interested in, of course, and I'm interested in learning anything I possibly can. But on occasion, I have heard some people who have made a wildly exaggerated claim based on the knowledge that scientists have in general, but that I've learned thus far. And these people I tend to discount as having any genuine knowledge or being of any particular value, other than to generate a great deal of hate.
Mr. Miller, I want to ask you a question. Have you heard of a device called a maser?
No, sir, I have not.
Well, I don't want to go into that. I am conducting a certain survey as to the education that our young people are getting in the field of science and what is happening to date. And we have been asking this sort of question around, and I'm trying to find out the level of competency of science students as against persons who have not got science training but have been out observing flying saucers and have been brought in reports for which many of them have been ridiculed and been made into senior schools. And I have tried to, by comparison, find out what our science students have been getting in the way of accurate information and grounded information as to what is happening in the field of science today. I would say, what do you know about this science of cybernetics?
I spoke to Mr. Ben Iskwit just a short while ago, and he explained the essence of cybernetics. And I also learned that he operates I believe he said it was a computing machine.
Yes,
programs the machine. So I derived a pretty fair idea as to just what cybernetics consists of.
Have you known that before you spoke to Mr.
I've heard of cybernetics. I've heard it discussed briefly, so that I was quite vague on the meaning of the word cybernetics and the nature of that art.
Mr. Muller, you have heard Mr. Otis T. Carr speaking on the program, and you have heard him speaking about a spacecraft. Have you heard his description of the device, of the mechanical device?
No, those programs I know. I heard people discussing him and his spacecraft, but I never heard him until this afternoon when he spoke at our gathering.
As a physics student, sir, have you heard of an object or a device which can rotate a rotor at a speed of up to 5 million rotations per minute?
No, sir. The fastest rotational device I've heard of is perhaps a drill that is being manufactured by a dentist. And it's capable of speed somewhere in the neighborhood of 30,000 revolutions per minute.
Not going up into the millions.
No, sir.
For a metal rotor.
For a metal rotor.
Rotating metal object going up into the speed of millions of rotations per minute.
No, sir. I have not heard of anything of that nature.
I see. Well, this is also part of my justification for the flying saucer observers, because this has been achieved here in the United States in the laboratory.
Yes, I don't doubt that.
Yes.
I am trying to discover what the
education of science is achieving. I am not a scientist and I am not a physicist. I am not really qualified to talk about this subject. I stand around in my own awkward manner trying to find out what is being discovered. I believe I have seen what looks like a flying saucer very recently. I don't say for certain that it is so, but I am trying to find some means of justifying the strenuous efforts made by these various persons to discover saucers. But you say that you think there is a possibility that all these stories are true. Did you say that or did you question
that? What is it concerning the accuracy of the statements made concerning flying saucer reports?
That is right, sir.
Do you also include statements such as those made by Howard Menger?
I would include all the statements. And a cover all statements are flying saucers. Well, what is your opinion of that?
Well, I'd like to say that I became interested in flying saucers some years ago, and at first I was quite skeptical. But recently, having learned of people such as Mr. Menger and also George Van Tassel, And having read books such as the book The Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Kehoe, I do not discount these stories. Undoubtedly, some of them are wild, some of them are fictitious. They're made up by publicity seekers. But I feel that a good many of these people are very earnest. Having spoken directly to Mr. Mentor, he seems to be very earnest. He seems to be very sincere. And
Mr. Miller, I want to ask you one question before winding up our interview here. Okay. On the Long John microphone. You are aware of the discoveries of Mr. Yang and me concerning the unbalance of nature? Have you been taught anything of that in your physics courses at school?
Not in my physics courses, but that is vaguely familiar. Could you elaborate on the question just a little further? It's vaguely familiar.
Yes, sir. I will tell you this. When I was going to school and studying physics, I found that I was being taught the physics that was contained in textbooks of about 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't too long back that I was at school. And I'm interested in finding out what today, 1968, is being taught to students who will be part of the crews of our spacecraft going to other planets in the very near future. This is all on schedule. This is no longer daydream or fantasy. And I'm very much interested in finding out whether our schools are fulfilling their responsibilities. Now, the question I ask you concerns the question of equilibrium in the universe, whether the universe is a balanced being or whether there is an unbalance, whether time and space are symmetrical in our existence or whether time and space can exist independently.
Sir, I'd like you to explain something. I've completed only one semester of college physics. I had no physics at all in high school, only chemistry. And the semester that I have completed concerned electricity and magnetism and light, and very little else. However, this semester we will go into mechanics to a certain degree, and therefore I will say that we have not yet come to that, to discuss that subject which you have mentioned. However, I would like to say this, by way of the information that has been given to us. My physics instructor, Mr. Kilburn, did make the statement one day that that engineers had recently accomplished passing the electron beam, sweeping the electron beam of an oscilloscope across the face of the tube at such a speed that the tray moved more rapidly than the speed of light. And this, of course, does not defy any known conventions. It does not defy any of the laws of Albert Einstein and so on. But this was an interesting fact that I had never heard before.
What does this mean?
I beg your pardon, sir?
What does this mean, what you have just said, that in effect someone has done something that enabled radiation or light waves to move across the field at a speed greater than the speed of light? Does this mean nothing?
No physical mass has been moved in excess of the speed of light because the electrons are shot from a gun and travel toward the face of the tube. But once they leave the gun, they do not change direction. But the let us assume that a bunch of electrons have just left the gun and head for the face of the tube. They're headed to a certain position. The next bunch of electrons are moved over. Their angle of movement is changed.
Might I mention to you what you have just told me, sir, is something that has been claimed by observers of flying saucers from the first days of the observing of flying saucers? Were you aware of that?
No, sir, I was not. That's interesting.
Well, that is very, very interesting to hear, Mr. Miller. I think you'll conclude at this moment. Thank you very much, sir.
I've been very pleased to meet you, sir.
Nice to meet you again. Why don't you drop us a note at the...
I'll do that, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
During the time we were out at the spacecraft convention, everybody was talking about the letter that I received a copy of, addressed to Miss Marla Batch, the care of Long John Station, WOR, New York 18. And this was read at the convention. What it means to you, I don't know. What it means to me, nothing. Would you be kind enough to read it for Lester Del Rey?
Right. Dear Marla, I listened in on the discussion between Harold Minger, Long John, and Charles William on the morning of the 28th of March, and although I had to leave at 2:50, during which time that you took a coffee break, and by so doing started to miss the better part of the revelations being discussed. But actually, until now, we have never divulged the reason for our return, or even wished to prove that we are here. Be assured, Marlow, that I am in no way trying to discredit you or the many others with claims of physical contact, for you see, dear, to allay our fear of us, we have conducted an extensive campaign of thought transmission, and although we realize the difficult problem of breakthrough, considered this medium as the one less likely to cause apprehension or chaotic upheaval in an established social system, period. We know that very deep concentration on the part of an individual will materialize a mental image as a factual experience that will be recording of both visual and subjective thought impressions in the brain are so closely related as to cause this condition. The success of our friend and its mental effect is still apparent, for at least he has not generally been depicted as ravenous monsters or ravaging hordes bent on conquest, but merely as unidentified flying objects which seem quite harmless. We have never completed the task to which we were assigned without any unforeseen mishaps, and perhaps in the near future our respective governments may have a direct contact. So let us take this matter as another after-record straw for the purpose of psychological reaction. I will not use technical phrasing, although some may be symbolic. We are directing it at you, Marla, for reasons that until now I believe that you are the only one and all the persons with claims of riding and flying saucers, meeting small men and large, with the impression that you originally came from the planet which has been named Venus, and also in the past, you made a very favorable impression on one of our groups. I will touch only briefly on the events leading up to our presence here today, for I will have to carry you back, dear, many thousands of years to a time when we perfected a vehicle capable of traveling space, but since we were still within the UK, in the course of subsequent exploration, we landed on the...